The House of Magic Foundation for the Arts is proud to present Listen Up, Ventura, a Rough Edge Studios production, engineered by R. Scott Bolton and sponsored by The Village Magic Shop.
Imagine a place where the arts come alive. A place where fantasy meets reality. A place where anything is possible and dreams come true. Imagine a place where you experience the magic of inspiration. Sounds too good to be true? Well, listen up, Ventura, because we're here to tell you about it. Now sit back, listen, and enjoy as we take you on a magical journey with your hosts, James and Julie. Take it away, team.
Listen up, Ventura.
Now, I thought he added your name to that.
Yeah, I played the wrong one.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, something didn't sound right there.
No, I played the intro from last year, so I'm sorry. I know right now if Jim's listening, I know he's very, very angry with me.
Oh, no, he's not. He's too sore to be angry.
Yeah, James not joining us today due to illness, but he'll be back hopefully next week. So, but this is Listen Up Ventura,
mm-hmm.
and you've got me, R. Scott Bolton. You've got Julie sitting across there.
Yeah.
And we have our special guest, Julie.
We have
introduce him.
Special guest here in the house today. And it is a wonderful friend of ours, Nick St. Nicholas from Steppenwolf, and World Classic Rockers now.
That's right.
Welcome in, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. It's a beautiful little place you have here.
Thank you very much. We enjoy it. We had a good time here.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a thrill to have you here. Julie's talked about you a lot. I've been a fan for a long time, so that's kind of cool as well. So it's really nice to have you sitting here in the studio with us and just talking about stuff that's been going on, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. Like, all you got to do is turn on our cable news and you turn it right back off.
That's right. Go find something entertaining instead, right?
Yeah, let's go to the Playboy channel.
Yeah, there you go. That always works for me, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know where to begin with Nick. I mean, there's so many places to start and so much to tell. Like you said earlier, he could go on for 24 hours and never run out of stories. So
no. No, he's got... My kids love listening to his stories.
Yeah, well, with a telling stories, it's a lot of fun. You know, I start telling stories and I put myself to sleep.
Yeah, it's good to have somebody to tell the story too, right?
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So, let's start with your history in rock and roll. I mean, I know we all know you were with Steppenwolf.
Right.
Before Steppenwolf, what happened before then? And then tell us when you stepped into Steppenwolf. No pun intended.
a lot of people have had different names using the name Steppenwolf. Mm-hmm. Steppen this and Steppen that and yeah. this kind of wolf and that kind of wolf and whatever.
Sure.
Thing is. So, but it all started out in Toronto, Canada back in 1965. Usually I have to have a calculator with me in order to keep me on track.
To do subtract the years, you mean?
When did that happen? Just a second, let me get this click, 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 click. Okay, that happened 14 years ago. Okay, boom. And but it did happen in Yorkville Village in Toronto, Canada. I kind of ran away from home, not wanting to, but... really wanting to, but undecided. But I had the energy to try to experiment with living without, you know, living away from my parents and trying to make it on my own. And I ended up in downtown Toronto, a place called Yorkville Village, which is the home of Joni Mitchell and Neil Young, Gordon Lightfoot, the band, Bob Dylan's group. And I was in a band called the Minor Birds. And it was originally called the Swingin' Doors. But then this guy comes in to the club, and he owned a Minor Bird shop. And he was looking for a band to basically advertise his birds and whatever and changed name of the band to Minor Birds.
It's kind of like early product placement.
Yeah. we're so broke at the time. It sounded like a pretty good idea to
sure.
me. And so we did that. We changed the name to the Minor Birds, and then which had no lead singer until the one day. It was a cloudy, rainy day, and we were rehearsing down at this club called the El Patio, and it's this kind of like a wrought iron staircase kind of step thing going down towards the club where we were rehearsing at in the basement. And the fella asks, he says, we stopped playing, and we welcomed him because he was the only other person in the basement other than the three of us. Okay, it was a drummer, a guitarist, and me playing bass. And he was, this was Rick James, that, you know, he had, he was a nobody at the time. He was black, and we saw very few black people in Canada. And I didn't ask him if he sang or not, because all the black people we saw all sang, but they were all on TV. And I figured, well, you know, I got a black TV artist standing right in front of me. And I asked him what songs he knew, and he said he knew Wilson Pickett, Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, Hold On, I'm Coming song, and knew the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. I said, hey, it's just what we need. And he became the lead singer.
Wow.
And so with him for about a year and a half. And then Neil Young joined the band. And then there was a kind of a mix-up with the management and the band. We did a number of things as a band that I didn't feel comfortable with. Like we did this after-school dance party in this little outside a town place called Aurelia, outside of Toronto, and it was like designed to be like the American Bandstand with Dick Clark show, that kind of a thing.
Uh-huh.
And he booked us on this thing, and he had his brother write two songs, Oh Minor Bird and Minor Bird Hop, and those were two of the most hated songs in my lifetime. I hated them. I did not want to play them, but it was a way to, if we wanted to eat and
sure.
never have a place to stay, we would play, you know, we would play those songs. And so we recorded them and then we would mime to it, because nothing was live back then. So we would mime to it. All these kids sitting there in these bleachers and waiting for us to come on, and we're all standing there in the studio. It was a small studio, and had a guy on the microphone who was told to keep his eye on a blind minor bird. It was one of 60 birds that finally learned to say hello, Ed Sullivan. And because he thought, well, you know, if I train these guys right, I could get them on the Ed Sullivan show, but I would need a bird to say hello, Ed Sullivan. And the only one that learned it was blind. And it was the oldest bird amongst 60. And he took that bird just prior to us going live. He put this blind old minor bird on Rick James's finger. And, you know, we practiced all the songs, and we went over all of everything to try and be everything that this minor bird guy, Colin Kerr, wanted us to be, except they forgot. We did never rehearse the part about putting the bird on Rick's finger. So we're okay, and the guy on the camera was told, keep your eye and the camera on the bird no matter what. Okay, fine, great. So countdown, 9, 8, 7, and so on. And then the bird started pecking Rick's finger. And Rick says, wow. And he flung it on the floor. And so now the blind minor bird's flapping its wings, and it's yelling, screaming out, hello, Ed Sullivan, hello, Ed Sullivan, hello, Ed Sullivan. And we're just standing there, and the minor bird manager, he's got all his head, it's like red as a beet, and the kids in the bleachers thinking, what the hell are we looking at? And there's this big mess going on. And so, like, we all kind of, you know, we just kind of laughed, and I said, okay, this is it. You know, I quit. So
that's a little brutal. That's a little, yeah, that's rough.
So we got back in our limos and went back to Toronto, and I quit the Minor Birds, and I went with a band called The Sparrow.
Keeping the bird theme, apparently.
And The Sparrow would later then be Steppenwolf.
Ah.
So that's how, that was kind of my movement. It was like when you're a young kid moving in and out of, you know, you're moving in and out of bands until you find the right band you want to be in to go all the way.
Right.
And sometimes that's possible and sometimes it isn't, because all the band, everybody fights, and you know, you have your band fights and then there's, you know, things going on, there's two guys against three guys or one guy against four guys, or it's always like they can't get it on track, and that's so important in a band for everybody to kind of accept and appreciate what we have, and then, you know, kind of all wanting to play the same kind of music, mm-hmm. and then have five people go in the same direction instead of like one person going this way, one person going that way, and then it shows up in the studio. You know, when you finally start recording and stuff like that, the song either sounds like it's together or it sounds like a great song, but it's not together, and so nothing happens to the song and it ends up on the shelf somewhere collecting dust.
So you felt that, well, you felt good that way when you went into Steppenwolf? You felt like it was that kind of environment?
Well, we weren't Steppenwolf at that time.
Sparrow, yeah.
Yeah, we're Sparrow, and we had no lead singer. I went out to try and find a lead singer and found one. I went to a little coffee house after hours and found a guy sitting there strumming on a Gibson acoustic guitar, and I liked what he was doing, and I especially liked the fact that he played harmonica on a rack, you know, like a neck supported rack, where he could play guitar and play harmonica and, you know, go back and forth to the harmonica and then to the guitar and then sing a song. And he had a song called The Pusher. I smoke a lot of grass, pop a lot of pills, but I ain't never done nothing my spirit can't kill. And then goddamn The Pusher, mm-hmm. you know, and that song got us kicked off 40 Drake stations once Steppenwolf was up and flying around in, you know, Learjets. And we get noticed that that song, like somebody went into one of the Steppenwolf albums and, hey, wait a minute, these guys are drug addicts, these guys are drug dealers, and we're supporting them, no way. And they took us off all the radio stations. And they didn't really listen to the lyrics. They just kind of assumed, they thought they knew what we were talking about, mm-hmm. and kind of put two and three together to make four.
Right.
And so
instead of listening to the gist of the song, they were listening to the certain words that stuck out, and that was
And back in those days, like if you said the wrong thing, they'd pull you. Like there's so many people trying to get. There's only so many radio stations, and there's so many bands, and it was trying to get on these stations. And you know, you had your tremendous talent out there, tremendous number of records coming out every year. And then if something goes wrong, they just yank you without taking another breath. You're off the air.
Yeah, and it was more of a nationwide thing then too. It wasn't so regional. Once it happened one place, it quickly spread to other places, right?
Yeah. We're playing Madison Square Garden. We're playing in front of hundreds of thousands of people, and they still they felt the need to take our records off the air, and it kind of put a damper on things.
Sure.
And but going back to the place when we had nothing, we're still broke and needing to get out of Canada. That was a big thing. And so we needed to find a lead singer, and found this guy, John Kay, playing in his little club. And I asked him if he'd ever played in a band before. He said no. I said, well, listen, we got a date Friday night at a school, after school dance party or something, you know, and why don't you just show up and I'll ask you to come up on stage, and then the other guys in the band won't have a whole lot to say, at least they won't have anything to say until after you perform, and if they like what you're doing on the guitar and your vocals and whatever, it'll be a lot easier to sell you to the band if they can hear you. And that's what happened, and they accepted John Kay as being the new singer for the band, even though they were looking for somebody else at the time. And so then we found a keyboard player, Goldie McJohn, and became the Sparrow that would then leave Canada on an H-2 visa and go to New York. And we recorded at Simon Garfunkel's and Bob Dylan's studio, 54th Street, and Columbia bought our contract. Sparrow was signed to Capitol Records in Canada. We did have a Canadian number one hit, If You Don't Want My Love, but couldn't get the release played south of the border. And so that was our only way to get to New York, was to get an H-2 visa through a contact from our new management, Stan Freeman. And Stan Freeman's brother, Al Freeman, worked as a sports editor for the New York Times, and he made it possible for us to get those H-2 visas. As you know, he's our sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended up being in New York for the remaining part of the summer, and then the visa ran out, and then it was either go back to Canada or we all take some arsenic or something or turn into heroin addicts and be drunk in the streets, and they'll pick us up and throw us in jail or something. I didn't know. It's sort of like, okay, here's a line. I said, we can either go to Canada, and to get back across the border is almost impossible. So we have one choice, and that would be to go to Los Angeles. And so all those that want to go to Los Angeles, step over the line. And all those that don't want to go back to Canada, you just stay right there we are. And so everybody stepped over the line, and those are the people that ended up leaving New York in a Malibu station wagon, tugging a 4x6 trailer, U-Haul, and we had a driver. I had three Black Beauties. Those are trucker's pills.
Uh-huh.
And I took three. I was the only driver. The other guys couldn't drive. John Kay's blind, almost blind. Goldie, his license was revoked. Jerry's had traffic tickets up the yin-yang. And Mars Bonfire, the guy that wrote Born to Be Wild, had never driven a car. And so it only left me to drive 62 and a half hours.
Wow.
Leaving New York and then hitting the Turnpike, Pennsylvania Turnpike, and then heading out to Route 66 all the way to Bakersfield or San Bernardino, and then coming down on the 10 and then to Hollywood.
Wow.
And just seeing palm trees gave me the energy to make it all the way, you know, to take it all the way home. The final run ended up at the Tropicana Motel where all the band stayed, only because they had $2.99 breakfast.
You know what? There must be a movie in that road trip. Because I can imagine the bunch of you musicians traveling over with just you having to drive, so you had to, you know, been exhausted most of the trip, but the rest of it just must have been wild.
It was even wilder when a movie finally did come out, had Peter Fonda in it called Easy Rider, and they had two of our songs in that.
The Pusher was one of them.
The Pusher and Born to Be Wild.
Right.
And that kind of helped us along the way, getting that song some airplay and getting the rest of our album heard and put on the radio and so on. But it was definitely a wild ride, and, you know, I needed some sleep after.
I can imagine.
I got to the Tropicana Motel, and I checked us in because I was the only guy with a license. So I had to check us in before, you know, as I'm walking around in a sleep, I'm sleepwalking, and finally got to a bed. I can't remember if it was the floor or something close to it, in some room at that motel, and got up the next morning and walked right in smack into this girl who asked me what band I was with, and I said I was with a band called Sparrow. She's from where you from? She said Canada, Toronto. She said, oh, okay. I said, you in a band? She says, yeah, I got a band called Big Brother and the Holding Company. I said, what's your name? She says, Janis Joplin. And I said, oh, nice to meet you. And so it was a nice encounter.
Oh, yeah. And very cool.
And then we ended up doing a bunch of dates together, became good friends with Janis, and I saw her quite a bit over the next 2 years. And so
that's fantastic. What a great, I mean, what a great lineup. Janis, you know, and then, you know,
can't beat that.
Sparrow. Is that Sparrow album floating around out there? Can you find it at record stores and things like that still? Is it, I mean, I'm sure they're, I'd love to hear that is why I'm saying that.
There is a Sparrow album. It was called John K. and the Sparrow. You know, John put his name in front of all of everything, like, which was normal for John to do. And so there's an early Steppenwolf that was recorded live at the Matrix without our knowing that it was being recorded on a Roberts two-track tape recorder underneath a grand piano on a little stage in a blues club.
That probably makes for a great recording now, though. That's a little piece of history, right?
Yeah, well, they took that tape, and somehow, I don't know how they did it, but the club owner must have sold it to the record company, the record label, ABC Dunhill Records at the time, and they went ahead and took it in the studio, remastered it, and then stuck it out as early Steppenwolf.
Ah.
And it was a live recording of The Pusher, the long version, on one side, and then a bunch of songs on the other side that we'd been doing live.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. See, something else I want to listen to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if Julie's mentioned it. We're going to take a quick break here, but my favorite song of all time is Born to Be Wild. When people ask me what my favorite song ever is, it is, I always say Born to Be Wild. It's a song that not only is it a great song, but it's the spirit that I love of that song. Uh-huh. And so I thought we'd play that. We have the World
Classic Rockers.
The World Classic Rockers, who I had the pleasure of seeing rehearse at the other place at one point.
Yeah.
And fantastic, by the way. It was one of those experiences that you'd like, I'm never going to forget this.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we have the CD. And do you want to talk a little bit about the CD before I play that track? Because I'm going to play Born to Be Wild.
Yeah. I got to take some memory pills.
Perfect. Okay. Well, we'll play this song and maybe the memory pills will sink in and we'll get back there. So this is the World Classic Rockers with the Steppenwolf classic, Born to Be Wild. And we'll be back after this on Listen Up Ventura, Rough Edge FM.
You guys are crazy. You guys are tearing it out. Are you guys ready to ride? Are you born to be wild? Here he is, the original lead guitarist from Steppenwolf, Michael Mana.
And this is Listen Up Ventura returning after playing the World Classic Rockers with Born to Be Wild, my favorite song of all time. And you know, there's something about that song, Nick. We got Nick here from Steppenwolf. That, something just uplifting every time I hear that song, something empowering about it. And that song's been around how many years now?
Well, it came out in 68.
And still... Mm-hmm. Still has that full impact every single time I hear it.
Right.
So I just wanted to let you know that. Cause
and you were lead singing on that one, correct?
Yeah, I had to lead sing basically because John wasn't in the band, the World Classic Rockers.
Mm-hmm.
And since Michael he's not lead singer. I don't think he is. He may sing in the bathtub.
Who doesn't?
You know, the shower or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but I had to sing because I was from the band, and so I got the opportunity to, you know, try and get, you know, the feel of the song and put it together and hammer it out and hopefully do it justice by doing it the way we did. And this was our version of the World Classic Rockers. We just finished. We just got back from Florida, as a matter of fact, from Orlando. We just did a date out there at the Dolphin Hotel? Yeah, at Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
There was a convention, some corporate function. And it was fun.
I bet it was.
I have Ainsley Dunbar, the original drummer from Journey.
Nice.
He's in the band. And we have the lead singer, Frank Cosmo from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
He took Brad Delp's place as the only lead singer for Boston for a while after Brad passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so he does all of our shows. And then we have... John Elefante, the lead singer from Kansas.
Very nice.
And then Michael Monick, of course, with Steppenwolf, and then on guitar. And then we have Mark Hoyt on keyboards on B3 Hammond. He's amazing, amazing support player. And then, of course, Randall Hall from the Lynyrd Skynyrd band. After the plane crash, it took the lives of most of the members. Mm-hmm. And Randall was the guitarist. He was the first one into the new reformation of the Lynyrd Skynyrd band. And Artemis Pyle was the drummer. And so he does an amazing job with all of it. He has that feel, the touch. You know, he grew up with Ronnie Van Zant. And they were all school. They're all from Jacksonville, Florida. And then we have Greg Walker, who was the singer with Carlos Santana for 10 years. I first met Greg Walker when they did Kel Jam 2 with Aerosmith, Heart, and Ted Nugent, and Rubicon, Joe Welch. I forget the name of the song, the one that Welch did, but that was a story in itself, that Kel Jam 2.
I can imagine.
You know, like over the years, you learn how to sneak in, right?
Yeah.
No matter where you are, no matter who you are or what you do, if you know how to sneak in, life's just a little sweeter, especially when I was asked to go to Kel Jam 2 to see these great bands, and I left Hollywood at like 5:30 in the morning, got to Ontario, and checked into the Hollywood, to Holiday Inn Hotel, and they wouldn't let me park there because they said, hey, that'll be like $10 for the day. I said, oh, crap. I forgot my wallet. I had $1.10. I had no ID. I had nothing.
Wow.
And I'm expecting to go, what, to Kel Jam 2 to see all these bands? And this has like a wall of China around it, and you're not going to get in. So I asked, hey, look, I was the bass player from Steppenwolf. He says, sure.
Yeah.
Sure you are. Sure. You're with the Rolling Stones too, right? I'll just step. Listen, yeah, you know, anyone with a nerve like this, like you got, you just park in the back somewhere where we don't see you, you know, like hide your car. And I ended up in the front lobby waiting around for someone that I would know that would
vouch for you,
would fight for me and extend maybe a ticket to get into the event.
Uh-huh.
And there wasn't anybody, and stood around there, and people were like, I think some of them were taking the purple vial or something, you know, they were acting kind of different, very familiar. And the door to the elevator, it opens up wide, and this guy walks out, and he's got like four stars. He looked like Patton. Yeah, and he had his wife and three kids with him. And I went straight up to him and I said, listen, I am so-and-so, you know, from Steppenwolf, and I don't have a pass to get in. I was wondering if you could extend a pass so I can get into the event and see all my friends. He says, can you wait here for a minute? And I said, sure. And he left to talk to the manager. And what he tried to do was to kick everybody out of the lobby, including me. He says, you're nobody, you're not him. And I said, yes, I am. Says, no, you're not. I said, okay, hey. So I went over and I'm thinking, I says, I got to get the hell out of here. This is really stupid. This is dumb. I don't want to see any of these bands anyways, even though they're my friends. And I wish I could get in, but looks like I'm just going to have to get in my stupid car and drive all the way stupid home and go back to my stupid bed and hook up to that stupid dream I was having before I even left. So I figured, well, I'll just take the shortcut back to my car, and went through the courtyard. And there's this helicopter. There's two helicopters going back and forth to go across the big freeway, the freeway 10, to the event, and then come back and pick up more people like Ted Nugent, his managers, and other artists, you know, from all these different bands and so on, and immediate family members, and fly them over the freeway to the Ontario Speedway where the event was going on. And they had a giant chain link fence around the event, and there was like cars as far as your eye could see, an ocean of cars coming both directions, north and south of Ontario, to try to get into the Cal Jam 2. And I'm standing there looking at these people getting on the helicopter, and it was only a few of them, and they were just stood there. And then this guy with a notepad, like a pad, would come out with a little pen and stuff and write things down, and then he would point at people to get on the helicopter, and he'd say, "Okay, you and you and you, okay, all right, you're going to the helicopter." I figured if I stood there and I look like I belong, there's a chance they might pick me to get on the helicopter.
You did have some nerve. Right?
So I just stood there, did nothing. I just stood there with these other people just standing there trying to wake up. And this helicopter takes off, and another one lands in its place. And then this guy with the little pad comes out, and he's looking around, and he points to someone, and he points at me. And so I said, "Okay." And next thing, I'm getting on this this helicopter with Bob Welch's girlfriend. It was Bob Welch, not Joe Welch. And so there's Bob Welch's girlfriend, there's me, there's the head of the security, right, and the head attorney for the International House of Pancakes.
That sounds like the start of a joke.
And the pilot, right? There's five of us. Uh-huh. And so we all get on. I say nothing. I don't even have a pass. I have nothing. I have my fingernails, a tongue, you know, my legs, my clothes. I was fully dressed. And they start talking. And I just kept my mouth shut and was listening to the head of the security tell the attorney how great of a job the security department did this year for this event. I'm listening to it. Yeah, fucking hey. This is amazing. You did amazing. I was going to tell him, you guys are just Superman. You subscribe.
The whole time you're sitting there, no pass, no nothing.
I had nothing. You know, I mean, I can remember my mom's last name, her original birth name. So the next thing is that the helicopter lands in the back of this. There's a huge stage section, and I get off the helicopter and get hustled into a limo. It was Aerosmith's limo. Mm. And so Bob Welch's girlfriend, she gets in, I get in, the other two people disappear, the guy with the security and the attorney disappear. And so now Bob Welch's girlfriend gets out of one of the trailers, dressing rooms, and I'm the only one in the car. And he says, the driver turns around and says, "Where can I take you?" I says, I was going to say, "I don't know."
You pick.
So I said, "Well, front of the stage." I said, "Okay." And he takes me to this VIP section in front of the stage at the Cal Jam 2 with these millions, about a half a million people there squashing up against the fence. You know, their faces squashed. They got tread marks on their faces. You got to take that? You got a phone
nope.
call?
Nope.
Oh, okay. So I sat there, and there was two other people in this designated area that had beautiful grass, which is like a golf course green, and it was smoking a joint. And they says, "You want to hit?" And I said, "Sure. Why not?
You're there as far?
Might as well." And I would sit down, and sure enough, Bob Welch would come on, and then Santana would come on. And then after the Santana segment, I did get to meet Greg Walker, and we talked a bit. This is the same guy I just got off the plane with yesterday.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. How things come around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's such...
And he's a wonderful man, too, because we met him when they were playing at Bombay's.
Yeah.
And I met him and his wife, and just you know, just down-to-earth type people, a lot like Nick, just very easy to talk to, very friendly. It was a great night. That night was a lot of fun, seeing all those musicians and such a nice intimate setting and just playing and kind of just enjoying it. To me, I'm riding high now because I get to see all the stuff that I was growing up with and thought it was the untouchables, and now I get to hang out and meet everybody, and it's really been fun. It's been nice.
I remember she told me about that night, and she was so impressed the next day. She says, as great as the show was and everything, everybody was such nice people that she just it made it even better. So, but are you going to do that again anytime soon, anytime out here in Ventura?
I'm not sure, but probably, like in Ventura. Like, I know I like to just hang out with the guys, you know, this Raging Arb and the Redheads that play around, and every now and then, you know, they ask me to sit in on bass and stuff, which I do. I love to play. But I also like my time off with, you know, spend time with family and so on. But speaking of Greg Walker, he's extremely happy when we get to the red carpet room at United Airlines, and because they have like these little shortbread cookies, and they're called Walker cookies. He opens up his bag and he just takes his hands like it and scoops up like one side of that whole section of Walker cookies. Since his name's on him,
you know, he might as well. Said,
are these your cookies, sir? Does it have Walker on them? Oh, I guess they are your cookies.
That's great. How did the World Classic Rockers all come together? How did this all come to be?
Well, you know, like after, like all bands break up, you know, sooner or later they all want to break up. One way or another, they end up in pieces. And I was asked to join a number of other split-ups in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at the Toys for Tot runs. And there's 50,000 Harley people at the event. And it was like Bobby Kimball from Toto and Joey Mullen from Badfinger and Spencer Davis and a number of other artists that would show up, and we didn't really have time to rehearse anything, but we did each other's songs as best as we could, and the bikers loved it. And on my way home, I thought about putting a band together with like members that were no longer part of the band that they started out with. Like, I ended up with Randy Meisner, who I met, he was with a band called The Poor before he joined the Linda Ronstadt the Canyon Band, and then would become the Eagles. And he would join World Classic Rockers, and he spent 10 years playing in this band. And that was 6 years longer than he was with the Eagles. And so Randy and I have been friends since like the day we met at the Tropicana Hotel way back then. And then we had Bruce Gary, the drummer from The Knack. Asked him. Carmen Appice, he was a drummer with Vanilla Fudge. Then I had Denny Lane was with the band for 5 years. As a matter of fact, he stayed in my guest house for 6 months. He was a tremendous guitarist, singer. His partner was Paul McCartney, and they were in a band called Wings. And so off we went to try and get some dates. I went to I put together a sign and like kind of an advertisement thing. I made up a banner which said World Classic Rockers, spelt out in big letters, and I went ahead and reserved a booth at the Fair Convention in Las Vegas at the Hilton, and hoping that I would get a lot of attention. You know, I got that Bobby Kimball there and Denny Lane and Spencer and so on, and Michael Monarch and from Steppenwolf. And I thought for sure that a lot of people would get totally excited and, you know, fall all over this thing.
I would think so.
Book it. But on the contrary, the agent said, you know, this thing has been tried before. Don't even go there. Like if you want to play, do something else. Go in the studio, but don't do this. Okay, they tried to discourage me from moving forward with this world classic rockers idea. Huh. They said this dude, you know, it's just, you know, it's been tried before, but it'll never work. So I got really kind of bummed out and took my stuff down, put it back in a white pickup, Dodge pickup, and traveled back across the desert back to Ventura and kind of hid the sign. I didn't want to look at a sign. I was kind of bumming out. But then I figured, well, shit, we got one more date to do at the Billboard Club down in Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard. And got all the guys together, and we set up, and we played that night. And then after the show, we went into the green room, and there was two people there, two guys waiting in there to talk to the band. And one was Kevin White, and the other one was Chris Burke from the William Morris Agency. And Chris Burke asked me, he said, would you be interested in doing some corporate events? And I said, absolutely, we would. And I had to turn around and ask the person behind me, what's a corporate event? I had no idea. We said yes, and this was 17 years ago.
Wow.
We have done over 450 dates.
Amazing.
And we've played over a million people. And it's going as strong as ever. We have bookings all the way through, you know, into next autumn, you know, next September. And so I feel good about, you know, being in a band that doesn't play like these bus tours and so on, but we play really, really good places, maybe two or three times a month. And sometimes, like a month and a half ago, we did five dates in a row. Kind of like we did end up on a bus.
Well.
And the funny thing happened from Las Vegas to Laughlin. The bus, after all these years and going back to a bus, it caught on fire.
Oh, no.
Jeez. Yeah.
So we're burning up like halfway between Las Vegas and Laughlin. The bus driver stops, you know, he just pulls over in the soft shoulder and the bus is like on a slant. And what the hell? What's going on? And I smell the smoke started backing up into the cabin. And he's told everyone to get off the bus because otherwise you're going to burn.
Oh, man, that's scary.
So we had a 4 or 5 fire engines in the middle of nowhere. I swear to God, I got pictures of it to prove it.
Wow. That's reason enough to stay off a bus for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And nobody talked. Like, what are you doing? I don't know. What are you doing? I don't know. Standing here.
Watching the bus burn.
Yeah. So we're standing out there in 120-degree weather waiting, hoping we'd see another bus or something.
Yeah.
And finally got there. So we got on it and traveled on the Laughlin.
Those are stories you have when you're starting a band.
This one. Yeah, the bus story. That's true.
The bus stories. Those are stories you hear when you're starting the band.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I remember Rick James, you know, the super freak guy.
Uh-huh.
We're in this real old, rusty old, beat-up car coming back from some high school date in Toronto in the middle of the winter. And we're, again, carrying, we had the ugliest trailer in town. Is it like a sawed-off truck part that they put a, like, welded a kind of a roof on it and painted it like this really shitty orange? And right in the middle of this snowstorm, this trailer, this ugly trailer passed us. It somehow got unhooked.
Oh! Yeah, your own trailer shouldn't pass you.
And Rick and me, we're sitting in the back seat, and I'm looking out the window, and I see something orange passing us. Hey, wait a minute. That's our trailer.
Oh, man. Now, I know we haven't even scraped the surface here of the stories you've got to tell, but you got to write a book about this someday, right?
So we're working on trying to scratch together enough words to, you know, kind of put it on paper and or maybe do like an electronic book or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of But we are definitely, you know, people have said, you know, to maybe try to put some of the stuff down, because once you go, you know, the stories stay where they are, you know, out there in the universe somewhere, and you don't really get to spread around some good times and stuff. And
well, because you've got funny stories, you've got great stories, you've got inspirational stories, you've got stories about, you know, historical music figures. It's a terrific collection of ideas and like you said, stories that you could tell forever. I mean, this, like I said, we've been on the air for about 40 minutes, and it sounds like we've talked a lot, but I'm sure you've got hundreds more stories just like that.
Well, it's you can't help but gather up stories, you know, like when you live as long as I have, and I forget how old I am.
That's what keeps you young.
That's right.
And the funny thing is that guy Colin Kerr must be pulling his hair out, or his brother's hair. And, you know, these two Monterbury guys are probably sitting in a house like a, you know, built to look like a cage. We got these black suits and, you know, these yellow turtleneck sweaters. Wondering why the Steppenwolf was on the Ed Sullivan Show. And we did get on the show.
The Minor Birds.
We got on the show without the Minor Birds. They couldn't figure it out. They figured, how could they possibly do that? Get on that show without the Minor Birds, damn it.
What song did you do on the Ed Sullivan Show?
We did Born to Be Wild, Magic Carpet Ride, and It's Never Too Late.
Fantastic. That's a good selection of songs right there.
Yeah, we did we kind of broke down our medley. We did half of Born to Be Wild and half of Magic Carpet Ride, and then I was co-writer on a song called It's Never Too Late with John Kay. And so we played all of it. It was our new release on the Steppenwolf at Your Birthday album. And it was funny. I remember doing the photo shoot at remember that famous that Houdini.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, remember he has a burnt out place. Somehow his place caught on fire, and he lived in Laurel Canyon, and it's right there by Wonderland. And Laurel Canyon, as you go up the hillside, we went into the burnt out section. We just stood there, and that's where we set up a big cake on the back of a door that we used as a table. And Joni Mitchell's out there, you know, looking on, and she stopped by to see her old friends, you know, because Joni used to kind of live next door to me back in Yorkville Village in Toronto.
Oh.
So we were friends way back then.
Uh-huh.
And as a matter of fact, Joni and I went skating back in 1976. And I called her up and I said, "Hey, Joni, what are you doing?" Besides writing songs. He says, "You know, you said you wish you had a river you could skate away on. Well, I found it's a river. Well, actually, it isn't a river. It's called the Hollywood chalet, ice capade chalet, or something like that. Close, almost like a river." And we did go skating.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, your dad owned a skating rink.
Yeah, he did. It was called Little Switzerland, and he would. We operated for a while, and we would have like the Canadian speed skaters come out there and practice, because it was a huge, it was about like eight times around, it was like a mile, and mm-hmm. had a bunch of trees in the center, like in a donut, and it had a creek on the dividing the Scarborough Golf Course and the Little Switzerland. And we kind of went out of business. My dad owned it with two dentists, and every year they would add more, as there's more people, there would be more roads and more houses being built and this and that, and more salt being used on the roads, and it would end up in the creek. That's where we got our water to water the ice surface.
Mm.
And it got too salty, so the ice wouldn't stick around. It got murky. My dad would say, "Okay, I'm out of here."
That was it, huh?
Yeah, no ice, no stay.
That sounds almost like a T-shirt. I don't know. All right, well, we're going to close things out right now with one more song here. As much as I love Born to Be Wild, and honestly, you can ask, before I even knew that she knew you, I told her that Born to Be Wild is my favorite song. Magic Carpet Ride, also one of my favorite songs. And I don't know if you know this or not, Julie, but there's a place in history for Magic Carpet Ride, too. Because when the inventor of the warp drive engine goes into space the first time to test the warp drive in Star Trek, the song they listen to is Magic Carpet Ride.
Oh, ah.
Yeah, so that's in Star Trek history, Magic Carpet Ride is a big part of that.
For all you Trekkies out there.
Exactly. So can people buy this CD? Can they? Is this something they can find online?
Yeah, you can go to the WCR website, mm-hmm. the World Classic Rockers website, and then you can go to the forum and request information to product and so on. And yeah, there's ways you can get these.
Okay, fantastic. So go online and search for World Classic Rockers. Look for Nick, and you'll find that, and you can buy the CD there. And we're going to play one more track, like I said, and I got to play Magic Carpet Ride.
Yep.
I hope you don't mind.
Absolutely.
I play that. Are you doing vocals in this one as well?
Yes, I am. And I was going to ask you, are we talking in Ventura, or are we talking elsewhere?
We're global right now. Anybody who wants to listen to us, we're on the internet. We're live internet now.
Okay.
And then it'll be available for download later by anybody in the world who wants to download it.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
Yeah, so what? I'm sure you've got fans all around the world.
Oh, that's great, fantastic. I want to say hi to all my friends in Japan. You know, like I've always promised that I'd go over there. I've never been there.
You haven't?
So if you're in Japan and you're a promoter, hire the World Classic Rockers. Okay, put them on a show in Japan, in Tokyo. That would be perfect.
I would imagine.
And don't we have a follower from somewhere around there?
We have several.
We have several.
So if you're listening.
Okay, because I know that we had talked about it before at one point in time.
Yes.
All international.
Absolutely. That's one of the beautiful things about doing internet radio. Anybody
right.
can tune in from anywhere, and also the podcast as well.
Yeah. And then after Paul McCartney got busted in Japan, you remember that?
That's right,
okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, Denny, you know, Lane kept telling me about it. Well, after Paul got busted, there was no way they were going to hire Steppenwolf.
Oh. Because of the Pusher song, right?
No, go. No.
Well, hopefully we'll get you over to Japan, because I think that knowing, not that I know a lot, but seeing what I've seen about Japan's tape and taste in music, they'd love it. They love the rock and roll there.
I think they would. I think it would go over big time.
Yeah.
You know. Probably end up living over there.
That may be true.
Yeah.
But, you know, for all that adoration, it might be worth it.
Yeah.
Nick, thanks for coming in. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you.
Pleasure
very
to meet
much.
You. Julie, we'll see you next week.
You'll see me tomorrow.
That's right. I'll see you tomorrow.
You'll see me tomorrow.
I keep forgetting tomorrow's Friday Shot Day show. Mm-hmm. And Jim, hope you feel better as well. We're going to close out with Magic Carpet Ride from the World Classic Rockers. And Nick, we'll come and get you on again here sometime to tell some more stories.
Yeah, it sounds great. Get better, Jim.
There you go.
Okay.
We'll see you next week, folks.
And now, my former bandmate from Steppenwolf, Nick St. Nicholas.
Good night, girl. I'm going to take you back to the summer of love. San Francisco. Me. Someone came to the
mind should tell you dreams soon. Fantasy will set you free. Close your eyes, girl. Look inside, girl. Let the sound take you away.
This has been a Rough Edge Studios production.